Welcome to Living Life on Purpose on the Living Well Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Suzanne Streisauer, and I'm a holistic life and career coach. And I've spent decades expanding my own consciousness, and I've found lots of resources for the body, mind, and spirit that I think you're going to love. On Living Life on Purpose, I'm going to be introducing you to many authors and experts on a wide variety of topics, including sustainability, spirituality, optimal health and well-being, and inspirational authors, musicians, and entertainers who are going to give you new insights and possibilities to enhance and enrich your life. Be inspired for life and join me today on Living Life on Purpose. Well, welcome everybody to the show today. I'm thrilled to have you with me, and I'm also thrilled to have my guest here with me today. And today's show is going to be on legacy, and what an interesting topic in light of the fact that yesterday was the 20th anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing and the loss of life and everything that we've seen since then. So legacy is a great topic and something that we all need to know something about. So we kind of have that energy in our spaces as we're doing the show today, although it's going to be an upbeat and positive show. And before we jump into all that, I want to tell you a little bit about myself and my life purpose, and that is to help people connect with the divine in practical ways that fulfill them and enrich the planet. And so all of the shows on the Living Well Talk Radio Network are actually designed with that in mind, and that is our underlying theme on the Living Well Talk Radio Network. So in light of that, I also like to share some astrological updates. And so those come from Michael Lennox, who I just love. He does something he calls a daily astro alert. And so I'm just going to give you sort of the gist of today, and that is that Pluto and Uranus are gone, but they're back today. We're in the middle of a void, of course, moon on this Monday, and that Mars and Jupiter are doing a dance as well. So there's a lot of upheaval in the sky today, and I'm sure if you're sensitive, you're feeling that on the planet. Several people have talked about it feeling a bit compressed for them and some discomfort. So just know that that's part of what's going on the planet during this period of time, is there's a shifting and sorting out of the energies. And the other thing is that all of the resources that I mention on today's show will be also something that I've put on the Living Well Talk Radio Network Facebook page. So if you're curious and you want more information, just go to the Living Well Talk Radio Network Facebook page, and it will all be there for you. So that should make life really simple. And also, I have a new website that is SuzanneStreisauer.com, and I think it's something that you'll really enjoy. It has all of my life purpose, coaching, book business. It has everything listed on it, so it's a great place to find all of the things that I'm doing nowadays all in one place, lots of free resources. Also, if you want a 20 to 30-minute complimentary coaching session, you can find that there. So tons of things on SuzanneStreisauer.com. I even have some visualizations there for you. Also, I have a sponsor that I want to thank for the show today, a couple of them. One is Podcasting by Professionals, and that is something for anyone who actually wants to do a podcast for themselves, to do something like I'm doing today. And you can check out podcastingbyprofessionals.com, and you'll find out more about that. The other thing that's really interesting is that I went online this morning before the show, and curiously, somebody had sent me something about ascension and the symptoms of ascension. And so for those of you that know, I do a lot of spiritual work and spiritual radio shows. And so when that came through, I was really interested. And so it talks about how we're feeling of late and what we're experiencing. And so if you're interested, it's the seven symptoms of ascension. And that's also on the Living Well Talk Radio Network Facebook page. So you have a great kind of a resource to kind of help you ground and get in touch with what's going on so that you don't personalize it. One of the things that I've found is lots of people have a tendency to personalize the energies and don't know that it's really not about them, but much more something that's happening on the planet. So a great way to love yourself and feel better about life overall. So I think that you're going to really love my guest for today and the diversity that she's experienced in her own life, and how she has creatively turned that into many businesses, and some really interesting things that she's done. So I want to jump right into my segment today, and my guest is Anne Ranson, and she has done a multitude of different things. And she spent over 30 years working with Fortune 500 companies in advertising and media. And her passion is in the field of personal growth, and she is a certified life and business coach. Her new program, Intentional Legacy, Gather Your Stories, Share Your Legacy, and Celebrate Your Journey, is designed for baby boomers wanting to leave a gift for those they love. And I love that because I've watched my parents do that and everything else, and she actually has a great way of doing that. So welcome to the show today, Ann.
Thanks, Suzanne. I'm excited to be here.
So, you know, you've done a lot of work with many, many different things over the years, and Ann and I have been privileged to go to the same coach training school and have stayed in contact as buddy coaches and peers all these years. So, Ann, for those people who you haven't heard you before on my show, tell us a little bit more about your life and what has made you move in the direction of legacy at this point in time.
Okay, great. Well, kind of the Reader's Digest version. I am a native Dallasite, so yes, that is a Texas accent that you're hearing. And so y'alls will be the order of the day today. Born and raised in Dallas, Texas. And probably a couple of the bigger life events that have helped inform the legacy work I'm doing is first that my father died when I was 8 years old. And as if just the act of his dying was not traumatic enough, I actually was the one who found him dead.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I walked home from school one day, one bright, sunshiny Monday, and as I came into the yard, I noticed Daddy's car in the breezeway, which was quite unusual. Daddy worked a lot, and I don't remember ever seeing him during the daytime. And so they was like, oh, wow, what's up? And so I went in the house and, you know, started calling for him and, you know, did not get a response. Looked in the kitchen, looked in the living room, and then made my way to my parents' bedroom, and there he was on the bed. I didn't know he was dead. At 8 years old, I think you don't know what that is. And his eyes were open, and as I approached the bed, it looked like he was looking at me. And I made up this story. Of course, I'm coming to believe that everything is just stories we make up, but I made up this story because I'd seen a sandwich in the kitchen that was half made. So I made up this story that while he was making the sandwich, he had burnt himself because he had a purple mark on his finger, and he'd put iodine medicine on it, and he was paralyzed. And, of course, you know, soon after being in the room with him, I called my mother, and she came home from work. And of course, he wasn't paralyzed. And, you know, my little girl's story was a little girl's story. So I think certainly that has had an impact on so many levels, as you can imagine, that anyone would have. And then in my early 30s, actually when I was 33, my mother passed away of Lou Gehrig's disease. And so I guess I've been around death a lot. And legacy, you know, is not a somber thing. Legacy is not something that is sad or something to get upset about. To me, it is an opportunity to take the realities of life, and that is that, you know, we're all going to leave this planet one of these days, and we don't know if it's today or if it's 50 years from today, and that if we, that we really, I believe, have a responsibility, have an obligation to take care of our end-of-life planning. My father didn't do that, and that's been a big motivator. He did not leave any kind of legacy, and, you know, I was only 8 years old, and he worked a lot. I don't know who he was. You know,
I'm so sorry to hear how that went down, Ann, because, you know, my parents lived until I was up in my 40s, and they took good care of that, and they thought about us, and they thought about legacy. So in that moment of you as the young child and all that, and then, you know, growing up into the teenage years, so what was it that you had wanted from your father as you reflect back now if you were going to have had a legacy from him? What would you have wanted?
His stories. You know, who was he? What made him tick? What did he do when he was growing up? What did he do? I know a few stories from his young adult year, but they're stories about him. They're not stories from him. And does that make sense?
It makes total sense.
Yeah.
It makes total sense.
I wish I had stories from him.
It sounds like he left you and your mom and brother and siblings kind of in a hard spot. Doesn't like there was like much money left or much, you know, life insurance money or any of the things that one would expect to kind of make life easy in place for you guys.
No, I mean, you know, I don't. We certainly weren't destitute, but we certainly weren't well off. And my mother was, you know, my daddy was only 42 years old. You know, that's one of the big messages about legacy that I've taken away from it, because people that I meet that are 35, 45, 50, you know, will say, well, you know, I'm too young to be thinking about a legacy. And I say, you know, I bet that's what my father thought too.
Right.
You know, but we don't know.
People don't think they're going to die anytime soon like that. So when your mom passed away when you were 33, Anne, did you have some of those same feelings, or had you had a chance to work with your mom to get some of that stuff resolved so that she left a better legacy for you, or was there still outstanding issues?
Well, at the time, I thought everything was complete because my mother and I were very close. We shared with each other how we felt about, you know, there was nothing undone as far as our personal relationship. I have no regrets. You know, she knew I loved her. I knew she loved me. We traveled together. We played together. But as I've done this work, what I realized is, but I also missed an opportunity to hear her stories and the journey that she was on in the process of dying. You know, I'd like to have a little wisdom from somebody about how they have faced dying. I'd like to understand, you know, does that become a time of reflection? You know, do you kind of go back over your life? And then it's just, you know, the fun stories. And, yes, I have many stories from my mother, but I don't know how much I ever ask about, you know, Mom, what were some of your most valuable life lessons? You know, if you could just leave one lesson behind for me and my brother and sister, what would that be? What do you think was the best advice? Those are the kind of questions. I knew that, you know, she dated Grady when she was at Baylor, and, you know, they were a hot item. And, you know, I mean, I know a lot of that stuff, and I'm so grateful. But I think
but you don't know the deeper stuff. I think what I'm hearing you say is, you want the deeper stuff. And I think when I think about legacy and my parents passing away, you do want that deeper stuff. You want some kind of solidity, some kind of, you know, understanding. I'll never forget one time my father, when I was 18 years old, he said, well, there are some things in this lifetime that you're never going to know about. And I thought that was an odd remark to make. And, you know, he was a Holocaust survivor. And, you know, to this day, he's now been gone for, you know, a few decades. He never did tell one story of being in the Holocaust, not one. And and he didn't want us raised Jewish. He didn't want anything to happen because, by God, he made it out, but he didn't want anybody else to suffer that. So we really became, you know, Americans. We did not have a religious faith or background to rely on. And so, you know, I mean, I was, you know, kind of a church alley cat, you know, went to lots of different churches. But I think legacy is can be lots of different things. So when you think about legacy and when you talk to people about legacy, what is the description that you use or the way that you define it so that my audience can have a broader sense of, you know, how that works and how you use it?
Well, technically, a legacy defined, Webster's Dictionary would say, it's what you leave behind. So in its most basic level, it's what we leave behind. When I think about it, the more I do this work, it comes down to one word, and I've used it several times already, and that's stories. We all have stories. We don't even know we have. In fact, before we got on the air today, I was preparing a speech that I'm giving tomorrow to a Rotary Club, and the topic is, what's your legacy? And one of the things that I suggest people do is something called a life scan. I think we may have even learned about that in our coaches training. I'm not sure where I learned it. Did we learn it in our coaches training? Where you kind of
we
make a timeline?
We did that life balance wheel, if that's what you're meaning.
No, this, but that's another good one. No, this is like where you just, you know, make a line on a piece of paper and you do a life scan. And, you know, the first time you go through, you're just kind of putting a notch on the line for all those significant life events. Somebody got married, somebody died, somebody was born, you get a job, you lose a job, whatever those significant things are.
Nice.
And then you go back, because that's all just information. That's really just data on some level. And then you go back and you say, and this is what happened to me this morning when I was working on this speech. And so I didn't have mine handy, so I thought, well, I'll just jot one out as an example for kind of show and tell. And so one of them was I got promoted. I was promoted to a nice new job in 1981. I was 29 years old. So, you know, I had that little notch on my piece of paper. So I thought, but what was the impact? That significant life event, what was the impact of that? And I allowed myself to reflect and realize that, you know, I was only 29 years old, and this was for me, it was certainly a huge promotion and more responsibility than I think I'd probably ever imagined that I would have. Part of what I was brought in to do was to start the Dallas Cowboys Radio Network. And, of course, that's like, oh, my gosh, you know, I love football. And the Dallas Cowboys, certainly in those days, were very beloved. So it allowed me to have access to the executives in my company. And we were a very successful radio company. And so all of these things just started coming to me this morning. Things that I'd never thought about until I stopped and reflected and went beyond, okay, here's the notch on my timeline, and allowed myself to really, you know, kind of go in. And I say it's kind of like an archaeological dig. You know, you get the little brushes and the little shovels, and you just, you know, sweep away the dirt so you can see, you know, the gem that's really there.
That's right. So tell us a little bit, Anne, what you did discover today, so people can have a sense of how this legacy works and how you've transformed this into a business. So out of that promotion, what were the things that came for you?
Well, one is it gave me a lot of confidence, because here was somebody that believed in me to give me this incredible opportunity. And I was brought in, it was very ironic, I was actually brought in over a woman that had been hired to replace me at a previous job. So first I was working for her, and then she was working for me. And so while that was a delicate dance, because I had great respect for her, it gave me great confidence. It mm-hmm. also, I was around all of these smart, successful people. I mean, the Dallas Cowboys, not that I worked for the Cowboys, but this was kind of the big community that I was in. They were very successful. The executives that I now had access to, they were very successful. Metro Media at that time was one of the major players in the world of broadcast, and they were the pioneers in cell phone service. So this was what I was around, and I think it opened up my mind to the possibilities of what I could do personally in my career, and just really what success looked like in a way that I hadn't necessarily ever considered before.
Well, that's great. So legacy in that example would be showing people what success can look like and what that process of getting there can look like out of your own experience. So you have created a company called Intentions Work, and the legacy work is intentional legacy. Now, why did you put those words together, and how are you helping people? What does intentional legacy actually mean, Anne, from a business perspective?
Well, intentions is a very important word to me in all of my work, and because if we don't set certain intentions, you know, it's very easy for us to just fall into, you know, bad habits or not be focused, and so we waste a lot of time even though we may be working very hard. And legacy, you know, the truth is that if I, you know, if a plane hit my house today and I were killed, I would leave a legacy. So we're all building, we're all creating a legacy every minute that we're breathing. The question becomes,
okay, but the problem with that is that, like, I know when my parents both suddenly passed away, then I was left with an enormous legacy called dealing with their legacy.
Yes.
And, you know, their papers and their furniture and their this and their that, and to be honoring of all that. And so, but I'm not sure that that's what you mean when you're talking about an intentional legacy, right? Or is it?
So it's both. So the first step, in my opinion, is you got to get your affairs in order. You've got to get a will. You have to get your medical directives, whatever those legal and medical documents. I don't handle that. I don't get involved in that, but it is certainly at the top of my checklist. And by the way, I do, for people who want to go to my website, intentionswork.com, if you scroll down to the bottom of the page, I offer a Have No Regrets checklist, and it's kind of a two-page document with a lot of suggestions of things that you want to take care of, because we want to leave having no regrets. So it is about taking care of business. That's a I believe that's an obligation we have, to not leave our affairs in a mess so that people who are naturally grieving pain and suffering at that terrible time, and then on top of that, they have to pull all of this stuff together. So that is one piece of it. The other piece of it goes back to stories, and that is, what has our life experience been? What are the stories that we'd like to share, that we'd like to live on? What are the, I call them the hard-won lessons. You know, we've all learned a thing or two by walking the planet Earth. And wouldn't we want our children or our grandchildren or just people in general, even if you don't have children? You know, there's people who will grieve when you leave. And if you can leave them some story, some wisdom, some of it may be great storytelling. It can be fun. It doesn't have to be all of the sad things that have happened. Often, thankfully, we can learn and grow from very happy things. So, but if we don't, we live in such a reactionary mode, most people, that we don't stop, and that's why intentional legacy are the words, because we have to be intentional and say, okay, you know what, I'm going to take a few minutes today, or I'm going to take a few hours this weekend, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to do that life scan thing that woman talked about, I'm going to write a legacy. There's some other things that we can talk about as we go on, but I feel like I'm kind of giving you a very long answer to that question.
Well, I think it's helpful, and it's a very, Anne has a beautiful website, so if you're interested in working through this checklist, it's there for you, and will help you kind of get where you need to go with that. So one of the questions, Anne, and I know this was true of my parents, that they, particularly before my father passed away, and he passed away before my mother, that he did not want to talk about death. And he was a doctor, so he saw death all the time, but he did not want to talk about death. He was never going to particularly die. Now, they did do estate planning, but how is estate planning different from legacy, or how does it fit into the legacy planning that you're talking about now?
Well, I think it's an important piece of it. In fact, it's, you know, part of my goal is to align myself with trust attorneys, financial planners, people who are already doing the legal and financial side of it, because I believe, and I say that, our most valuable asset is at risk. And people say, oh, really? What's that? You know, they think I'm about to give them a stock tip or something. It's your story. What's more valuable? You know, because Aunt Sally's diamond ring someday will bite the dust somehow. But your stories live on forever, or they can. But you have to share them. You have to know them. You know, that's why, gather your life stories, share them, and celebrate them.
Now, what about, Anne, people who are really more introverted, who don't want to share? What do you do for them with a legacy? How do you get them moving along with all that?
Well, I mean, I think that it depends on who you need to share things with. If you have children, in my opinion, again, you have an obligation for these things, certainly for end-of-life conversations. I know I just recently had this conversation with my son, and I was very nervous. He's 24 years old, so he's old enough that we need to have this conversation, and yet he is a very reserved, quiet person, and I was very concerned how he was going to react. He and I are very close. I'm a single parent, and, you know, I imagined that he would not want to talk about me dying. I was correct. He didn't want to talk about it, but we had the conversation about that I don't want to be hooked up to machines, that I'd like to be cremated. We talked through a lot of different options. But one of the most important things that I wanted to discuss with him is, because I don't believe I am this body and that once I die, my spirit will live on, I don't really care what he does with my body. You know, I'm thinking I want to be cremated, you know, scatter my ashes on the ocean or something. But I wanted him to think about, what does he want? Because he might need something different, because he's still going to be here.
And so actually, how do you get people to have those conversations about death, Ann? How do you get people to comfortable to talk about, you know, just like with Taylor, you know, how do you help people have those conversations about death when they don't want to, or they're in denial, or whatever the reason is? How do you help that happen?
Well, a couple of things. First, I think the healthier and younger you are, the easier it is, because since we're in total denial that we're not going to die and we're not going to get sick, you know, when there's nothing at stake immediately, it's easier. So it was much easier to have that conversation with Taylor when I hope I'm, you know, 10, 20, 30 years away, although it could be 10 seconds, I don't know. And the other thing is, I suggest using current events as a catalyst for conversation.
So just like the Oklahoma City bombing that just took place.
Exactly. That was a perfect lead-in. You know, and I actually used that same idea to continue the conversation with Taylor, because after we had the conversation about me, the next day he was packing up to go back to school. And you know, I was sitting on his bed and he's doing his thing. And I don't know what prompted me to say it, but all of a sudden I said, you know, honey, obviously I hope you live a million more years, but have you thought about what you would want if you were in an accident and you died? What would you want? And so I used that really because it was what was up for us. But you could hear a story on the news about someone who passed away, or someone who, you know, it's the positive side of this too. It's someone who sets up a foundation. This guy, I can't think of what his name is. He's in North Carolina. He has ALS. He has started this foundation just kind of by accident. He's giving butterfly grants. He saw two girls in a cafe one day, and they were like school-age girls, and he decided to give them each $50. And the only instructions he gave is do something kind. So they ended up actually funding a celebration in an African village that had eradicated Ebola. And you can imagine that this celebration in this village was a huge success. And it was all because these two little girls that were like 10 or 12 years old used their $50 each to put this celebration on. So,
and what a great legacy, talking about legacy, that those girls left and then that man left. And you know, I suppose you could say the same is true about some of the foundations that are, you know, like Heifer and some of those foundations that they have online, Grameen Bank, that are leaving amazing legacies in that way. So I love that, Ann. I think what a great way of looking at all this. Now, I know you did some research on actually what the top 10 regrets are, or top 5 regrets are for people that die, and that, you know, I'm just curious how that fits into the conversation that we've already been having on the air today. And if you're listening and you want to participate in this conversation because it is a great topic, you can call into 646-652-2336. And I actually have chat up today. So you can go to chat or you can call into 646-652-2336 if you want to weigh in on legacy and death and dying. So what are the top five regrets, Anne, for people that you've discovered in your research?
Well, my favorite book about this, and I'd really suggest that everybody get this, is by Bronnie Ware. She's an Australian lady who is, she was, in Australia they don't call them caretakers, but whatever the equivalent of caretakers is. And because she had been doing this kind of hospice-related work for a number of years, the book came out of her personal experience of what she learned, what people told her year in and year out were their greatest regrets. And so what do you suppose the top one was had to do with people not living their lives for themselves? They live.
Yeah, I would have thought it would have been something like that, or not communicating, you know, how they truly felt, or not having done something that they really wanted to do, and all of a sudden time slipped away and they couldn't.
But the number one was not being true to themselves. You know, they lived for other people's expectations. You know, they became an attorney because their parents wanted, you know, everybody in the family had always been an attorney. So that was the number one regret. The number two was, and I've heard this one often, I wish I hadn't worked so hard. You know, and how that can rob people of these rich life experiences that if they hadn't been at the office. I think about my father. He was an insurance salesman. And, you know, he worked nights and weekends because that's when his customers, his prospects, were available. Well, guess when I was available? Nights and weekends. You know, and so I truly didn't really know him because he worked so hard. So, you know, that was the number two regret that most people had. Number three was about expressing feelings. Number four was about staying in touch with friends. And the fifth one I think is very interesting, particularly the way it's worded. It says, I wish I had let myself be happier.
So what exactly does that mean, Anne? Because I think that somehow that feels to me like people held back in some ways or didn't or had opinions about things that didn't allow them to be happy. So what exactly does that mean?
Well, I think that, you know, it's been a while since I've read the book, but as I recall, it's, you know, letting fear stop us from doing things we want to do, letting other people's judgment stop us from doing things. You know, letting people's criticism. It's like, you know, well, I really love to dance, but I'm not that good, and people laugh at me when I get on the dance floor. It really makes me happy, but I don't want to hear people laugh at me. You know, so I think it's the way, I think it ties back really into the first regret, which is about not living your own life. But the reason I think it's particularly interesting is that here these people are in the last days, hours, weeks of their life, and they are recognizing that they are responsible because they said, I didn't let myself. They're owning their life. They're not saying, I wish you hadn't or she did and all that other kind of stuff. It's that recognition that, you know what, we really are responsible for our lives and the choices we make.
I love that, and I think it's a really honoring way for people to wake up. It's a little sad that it's at the end of one's days, but sometimes that's actually how it works. So in your work, Anne, I know that you've created a program for people to help them figure out their legacies. How exactly does that work?
Excuse me. Well, it's a combination of things. It's a combination of coaching and actually doing. You know, the coaching piece really has to do with me helping people do this archaeological dig, helping them through my questioning and through my prompts to get at those stories. You know, asking the question that goes beyond the obvious. You know, what were you most proud of? Well, that's great. Let's hear that. But then why? Why was that particular thing? And so part of it is in the discovery phase, that whole let's gather and preserve the stories. But then we move into the sharing piece. So how am I going to share this? Am I going to write what's called an ethical will, which I think is something we should all do? And in case people aren't familiar, I wasn't before until I started doing research on all this a number of years ago. So an ethical will is basically the same as your normal will, but your normal will, you know, says who's going to get Aunt Sally's diamond ring. Your ethical will passes along your values, your lessons and wisdom, and your hopes for the future. So it's one of the ways that we can pass on our stories. So ethical will.
So none of this sounds like it's too hard, Anne. I mean, people, you know, people could actually do this without a whole lot of headache if they just kind of apply themselves and they kind of have some support, because I can imagine, you know, sometimes people are a little, you know, squeamish about death like we've talked about, or not really certain, or, you know, what about the politics in families? Like, I really want to do this for my legacy, but I'm afraid how so-and-so is going to be, and then you need to hear about all the things, and particularly in rich and famous households where we couldn't talk about this until after they had died, and, you know, so how does all that stuff play in all this?
Well, I mean, it has to be part of the conversation. I know I recently did a video biography for a woman who will be 93 in June, and she is gorgeous and amazing, and, you know, she just has these great stories to tell. And some of the questions that I ask, because I'm off camera and I'm just asking questions, you know, and she's answering the questions. So the way a few questions were answered were politically incorrect in the family. And so we talked about what to do about it, because the original idea is that the video would be, of course, shared with everybody in the family. So we had a couple of choices, to either do some editing, because you never want to hurt people's feelings, and her intention was not to hurt anyone's feelings. She's just answering questions off the top of her head. And so the choice was, do we do a little bit of editing, or do we leave it as it is and run the risk at hurting some people's feelings, even though that was not the intention? So, you know, you have to navigate those situations to see what is in the best interest of everybody that's involved.
So that's, you know, where your sensitivity, your being a coach, kind of plays in to help make this smoother. And what was her choice, Anne? How did she decide she wanted to handle that?
Well, as of right now, we're doing some editing, because we're still in the post-production stages. So now, once she sees it all, you know, then she'll have the opportunity to say, oh, well, you know, I think we can leave some of that in. But that is, you know, I believe, and you and I have talked about this over the years, as coaches, our main job is to listen. You know, and you're listening for what's spoken as well as what's unspoken. You know, and that's why I believe that for people who want assistance in this journey, that I can provide a valuable service for that. But there is nothing in the world that makes it, you know, require any outside assistance at all. It just requires someone to make a decision, set the intention, yes, I'm going to do this, and start writing things down, start recording things. Every one of us that has a cell phone, which is like 98% of the population probably, has a video and audio recorder on their phone.
So let me ask you a question, Anne, because as I'm listening to you talk, I'm thinking, you know, my mind has started to creatively work with this. So what would happen? I mean, you know, you gave everybody that, you know, free checklist on intentionswork.com, and if someone was to do that, they could just decide they were going to do some little selfie videos that they posted to YouTube on this topic, right? They could just take
Absolutely. Each
one of those kind of major things and, you know, it could be kind of sort of free-flowing. But what you offer is a bit more sophisticated than that, right? They actually wind up, you know, you're gathering the stories right now with this 93-year-old. And then how do you decide how many or how much content? Because if you left this journey to my mother, who had a library-sized room filled with our 16,000 relatives that she'd done for us genealogically, how do you help people navigate? How do you help them kind of, you know, sort this out and create some order and make some sense out of this?
Well, a couple of things. You know, budget dictates a lot of it, you know, because for most people, they're saying, you know, I'm willing to spend X number of dollars to put this together. And so then within that, we talk about, okay, so what can we accomplish within the context of the amount of money you have to spend? What can you do by yourself that helps make that money go a little bit further? You know, what is the part, you know, probably if you want to do something more professional as far as audio and video, then let's put the money there. And then you do some of these other things on your own. And then, you know, there's people who have, you know, where money is not an object. And then we really, that's part of the coaching process, is to begin to kind of hone in as we do this life scan, as we go through these questionnaires that I've developed on, you know, what are these major lessons? You know, it just kind of starts coming together. You know, I don't know how else to really say that, except that, you know, the story starts to build itself. Now, I mean, you know, and it could be as wild and creative. I had somebody ask me, I wonder if I could send my ashes into space. And it was like, okie dokie. Well, I have not had that question asked before, and I have no idea, but I did do some research, and guess what? We can send our ashes into space if we want to.
That's right. Send them into space, make a coral reef. There's a bunch of creative things that now can happen.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
So it's what do you want? So I've just started building a list of possibilities. You know, are you a musician? Is music important in your life? Do you want to commission a song that leaves behind your story? Do you want a piece of music written? Do you want to write a lyric? You know, so a lot of it at the state, once we've kind of got the stories together and now we're thinking about sharing, that becomes a brainstorming process.
Oh, I love that. I love the infinite amount of possibilities and creativity that you have with all of this too, Anne. Now, it seems to me that, you know, unless it was a terminally ill child, you know, and certainly we've had some famous terminally ill children, you know, who've written beautiful books that have been on Oprah and whatnot. But if not, what age? Because it seems to me baby boomers, you know, as you're getting into the last third of your life, but what age do you recommend that people actually start or create these legacies? Or is it a function of their sort of health, just like I was thinking of these young children?
Well, I think absent a really young person who's ill, then I think it's more about life stage. To me, when you have children, that's a good catalyst, you know, because I think we owe our children some of this. How detailed it is, it could be a one-page letter. And there's stories, because I read about this stuff a lot, there's stories about, and in fact, I'm thinking of one that's been going around the internet for a million years, about a teacher who saw something in a student that nobody else saw. And one of the things that was her habit was to write these lovely letters to her students. Words of encouragement and seeing them for who they were. And of her running into this student like 20 or 30 years later, and that young man had that letter folded in his wallet 20 or 30 years later.
Well, and, you know, I think about the parents who, you know, I think it was on 60 Minutes or something, where parents actually, if they knew they were going to die, and one woman knew that she wasn't going to see her daughter become a teenager because she was dying of cancer, she actually told her in videos all these different things that she was going to experience as she got older as part of her legacy as she was, you know, going to be leaving the planet, which is
kind
of what you're talking about.
Yeah, that book is on my website. It's called Living, well, if it's the one I'm thinking of, it's called Living with the End in Mind. It's actually a woman from Dallas. She wrote letters. She did videos for, you know, when they got their ears pierced, for when they graduated from high school, when they got their first kiss, when they got married. You know, the courage that it took her, because, you know, when you're doing it and you're ill and you know your days are numbered, obviously that can be a much more emotional situation. And yet, you know, you don't want the message that you're leaving for your daughter on the day of her wedding to be a terribly sad thing. So, you know, that takes a lot of courage. And I so admire people who are able to do that.
Yeah, and I don't even know that I would think that through, although maybe, you know, if I was developing a coaching program or something where you kind of think things through, but just to think about that for life I think is remarkable. Or maybe she went and used something like your checklist and those ticks of life, and then went through and just addressed how that was for her. So now, in the first steps, Anne, you have people go and do kind of like their check, your checklist, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then what? If they do it on their own, if they're a DIY kind of person.
Well, you know, it all begins and ends with the story. So now you've got the stories. Once you get the stories, and maybe it's 3 stories, maybe it's 10 stories, whatever it is, then how are you going to share those? And that's when it comes to things like there's an ethical will. And again, that could be one page, that could be 50 pages, depending on what it is that you want to say and who you want to share it with. There's something else called legacy letters. And again, these are all things people can do on their own. And a legacy letter simply is a letter written to one specific person that, again, shares a story, a lesson, some words of encouragement. You know, maybe it says, you know, I've known you since you were a little bitty girl, and from that very young age I saw the talent in you that now as a grown woman I'm so excited to see you dance on stage, or, you know, whatever it is. It's like the letter that little boy from elementary school was carrying that paper in his wallet when he was 30 years old. You know, so maybe there's one to each of your children, or it could be to a niece, or if you don't have children. I mean, there's nothing, one should not limit themselves in their legacy sharing to just their family. You know, I have some friends that are as close, if not closer, than some of my family.
Wow. So, Anne, when you think about your work as compared to others, you know, and certainly, you know, some of the more legal documents, ethical wills, wills and trusts, all that kind of business are handled by estate attorneys, financial planners, all sorts of people. But what makes this kind of legacy program that you offer different than other people's?
Well, of course, I think it's always hard for us, to, you know, as the person doing it, to share that as effectively. But I'll say this. My intention is to provide a full suite of services so that for the person who wants, I can take you from the beginning all the way to the end in the gathering and the preserving, you know. So we take a video camera and we walk around your library one day and you talk about the books that have meant something to you, the books that were gifts, the ones that had the greatest impact on you. You know, we can go through the full gamut or any piece of that. So maybe you're great at writing and you've handled all that, but you're not as comfortable with electronics. You know, we're moving into an age, obviously, well, we've moved into an age where electronics. So I would say, it's kind of the combination of I'm a trained coach, and so I think that I bring unique skills into it because of that. I'm a trainer, and so I think I bring certain skills with that. And I really have a personal passion based on my own life stories that I think together, you know, you kind of, it's, you know, of course, I love Venn diagrams. If y'all know what Venn diagrams are, it's where the 3 circles, You know, one of them is coaching, and one of them is actually about strategy. I'm very strategic. So that is all about looking at the end and then how do we get there, and then my personal passion. And in the middle of those is where legacy coaching lives.
That is a great thing. So if you want to go and learn more about Anne and intentional legacy, you can find her at intentionswork.com. And I put that link on the Living Well Talk Radio Network Facebook page. So I think that that's fabulous, Anne. And we have, you know, another 5 minutes left in our segment today. And I want to share with our listeners and people about your other business, because you're another Renaissance woman like myself, and so you have to have your hand in a bunch of different pies. So talk a little bit about your other business, which is a handmade, you call yourself a tea purveyor, and your company is the By the Grace of Tea. Talk a little bit about how that business got started and what your intention was for By the Grace of Tea.
Okay, well, thank you. Well, I always love to talk about my tea business. Well, it was another kind of God thing, as I think this legacy thing is. And for quite a number of years, I had been working with the idea of civility, that we need more civility in our society, that we get beyond demonizing people just because they think differently than we do. And so I saw a program with a woman who's an expert on afternoon tea, the ceremony of afternoon tea, and she talked about what a civil activity and how intimate it was. And it was like, wow, this is my kind of idea. And, you know, over the course of a few months, somehow I thought, well, you know, if I could start a tea business and encourage people to sit down and have a conversation, you know what? I bet we could solve every problem in the world. And I've really come to believe that if we would just sit down, of course, in my case, over a cup of tea, very intimate activity, we could solve all the problems of the world if we would just sit down together. And so that really was the impetus, and the mission of By the Grace of Tea is engaging people in the joys of tea and the conversations it invites. And
well, but
so
it's even more than that, Anne, because you've also done some really interesting things with the naming of your teas. What are some of the names of the teas and then the flavor, the types of tea that's actually in those different blends?
Well, the names are all values that I want to promote. So possibility, civility, simplicity, vitality, productivity, they all end in the T sound, and they're all values that I want to promote. I've got green tea civility, which is my favorite of the green teas, is a green tea with raspberry and pomegranate. Possibility is the first tea. That's one of my favorite words in the English language that actually came out of some work we did together, Suzanne, at our coaches training all those many years ago. Possibility is a white tea with coconut. Most of my teas are organic. Some of them are fair trade. I think a couple are Rainforest Alliance, so I do go for very high-quality teas because it's about the experience. Yes, I have very good teas, and I want you to like the tea, but I want you to use it as an opportunity for conversation.
So let's just say that somebody decided, you know, maybe it's even around legacy, you know, so legacy and possibility. So talk about how you would have people be drinking tea together and going and opening up these conversations, Anne.
Well, I'm actually about to launch a new program in Dallas this summer, and I haven't arrived at a name yet. Maybe one of your listeners or you, Suzanne, will come up with a clever idea. But it's kind of a throwback to something that many of us grew up with. I don't know if you did, Suzanne, but I grew up as a young girl, and in school we had one day a week when we had show and tell. Did you have show and tell?
I did. I loved show and tell.
One of my favorite parts of class. Yes, of course, because you get to bring something and tell a story about it. So I want to begin hosting some show and tells, and of course, I will be serving tea. So over tea, we'll have engage in the joys of conversation and tea. To talk about whether you bring something to show or not, the idea is to tell stories, to share stories. And we'll have different prompts. You know, each night we'll have a theme. You know, the first one I'm looking at is going to be themed around music and what has been the influence of music in your life. What have been some of your favorite songs? What was the first album or 45 that you ever bought? So that's one of the ways that I see tea and the legacy coming together, because conversation over a cup of tea, in this case, about legacy, I mean, you know, how can you go wrong with that combination?
Right. That's right. So in the tea business, Anne, where do people go to find your teas? Because I don't know that they're located on the intentionswork.com website, but where do people go to find your teas?
Thank you. It's my website is called bythegraceoftea.com. And there's also a special offer on that website. If you go to the bottom of the page, I've put together an e-book. It's about a 20-page book on how to host a tea party. And if you'll sign up for my mailing list, you can get a copy of How to Host a Tea Party ebook.
Well, so one of the fun things about that is that you have really done some nice things with that and what you offer people so that they can learn more, have great teas that you offer, and the newsletter's great too, Anne. So it's a wonderful thing that you know have for people. Now, do you ship the teas, Anne, or is that just something that happens locally in the Dallas area?
I ship a lot. I've gotten very friendly. I'm very first name basis with the postman or post lady, and so yes, I ship in the United States. I don't ship outside the United States. Well, at least I haven't yet. Maybe I will be.
That's right. Now, I know one of the things that I love is I've bought little samplers. Talk about how your samplers work.
Well, the little minis are a great way to try different teas. Each one makes 3 cups of tea, and they are not listed on my website. So if it's something that you'd like to try, my email is on the website. You can send me an email. I can certainly ship those to you. They're 3 for $10. Each one makes 3 cups, and it is a wonderful way to try different blends. But I also, my most popular gift item is called the 12 Days of Tea, and it is one serving of 12 different teas. It comes in a lovely little lucite case with a tea ball, very easy to ship. It's very popular. In fact, for Mother's Day, of course, at Christmas, I almost sold out. I was making those things as fast as I could. And now, of course, people are now starting to buy those for Mother's Day, which is coming up in 2 or 3 weeks. So that's another great way to try a variety of teas.
Yeah, and what a great thing. I love those little teas. Well, Anne, it's been absolutely a pleasure to have you with me again on the Living Well Talk Radio Network's Living Life on Purpose show, and I wish you all the best in this next upcoming endeavor.
Thanks, Suzanne. Thanks for having me. It's been great fun to talk.
So what a great thing, having all those different aspects of legacy that Anne was sharing with us today, also things about the tea business. And so I just want to tell you a little bit about my guests so you can come back and join me again next week. Next week I'm going to be having Dr. Lori Moore, and she's a fascinating woman. She's an animal communicator and an intuitive. She's written 10 books, so she's going to be talking about animal communications, also a great, great guest to call in for. And my second guest in the second half hour, she's going to be on from 1 to 1:30, is Carol Savoy. She's going to be talking about her journey of quitting smoking. And she did that after smoking for 35 years with 5 simple steps. And it's also a story of her loss of her husband, who did not quit. So you'll get the contrast. And she's going to be talking about her book, The Last Cigarette. So I think you'll find both of those things interesting. And again, if you want to find more about me and the different services and coaching that I offer, you can go to SuzanneStreisauer.com, and you'll find all kinds of informational and inspirational things on that page. And I also have a guidebook, 7 Steps to Living a More Purposeful Life, which you can find at AwakenToYourLifePurpose.com. So lots of fun things. I want you all to be inspired for life, and we'll be back again with you next week. I hope you've enjoyed the show today. Enjoy all of the quality programs and archives we offer on the Living Well Talk Radio Network. I look forward to having you back with me again next week. And in the meantime, remember, be inspired for life.